Hello and welcome to the Catholic Exchange Podcast. This is your editor and host, Michael Litchens, here today with a voice that will be very familiar, or at least the name will be familiar. It's her first time on our podcast. I have Miss Susie Andrus here today. Susie is a graduate of both, I know, Thomas Aquinas College, but also the University of Notre Dame. You've written on many subjects, especially on Thomas McGovern, who one of the great, great scholars. And Susie here is a frequent writer here. Today we're talking about a favorite subject for both of us, the servant of God, Marcel Van. There's so much material to cover. I can't give you all of Marcel Van's life. We'll cover a little bit in this podcast, but I also want to encourage you, all of you, to please go online. Either you can go to CatholicExchange.com. We'll have all the links you'll need. You can also go to Susie's website, SusieAndrus.com, where you can read a little bit of Miss Marcel's musings. But Marcel Van, a servant of God, was killed in an internment camp in North Vietnam during the Troubles. And in the meantime, he was something of a little brother to St. Therese and offers a way of holiness in the months I've discovered him that I found very inspiring. And I'm hoping to share that all with you, our listeners. So, Susie, with that long about introduction, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Michael.
So let's go ahead and get started today. Can you tell me, how did you find the servant of God, Marcel Van, and what brought you to devotion to him?
Well, I've had a long devotion to St. Therese.
Yes.
And I was reading a booklet about her that Catholic Truth Society had published.
So, oh, God bless them.
I remember. Yeah, exactly. It's an English publication. I'm not sure who, or British. I'm not sure who marketed it here at the time. But when I think maybe Ignatius Press, but when I came across this little booklet, Spiritual Children of St. Therese, it had a page on Marcel Van. It was a very small booklet, like you might find in the back of church, and each entry was short. But I was very intrigued by little Marcel. There's a picture of an Asian boy, and the little recounting that Leonie gave said that he had become the little brother of St. Therese, but in particular, it mentioned that he had conversations with her. And it might have even mentioned that his spiritual director asked him to write these conversations down, but I immediately thought, this would be fabulous to be able to read these conversations that St. Therese had with this Vietnamese boy, because I think it indicated that Therese personally taught him her little way. And I read that about him maybe 10 years ago, a little less, but I didn't have access to any other information about him. And then sometime between then and now, maybe 5 years ago, I saw, I think maybe on the website Mystics of the Church, I saw a blurb about him, or a longer explanation of him, and it even had some quotations, possibly from his conversations with Therese. But for some reason, the Holy Spirit must have thought that wasn't the right moment for me to meet him, because whereas before, originally 10 years ago, I thought, if only I could get a hold of this. 5 years ago, when I saw the little bit about him, there was no access to any more information than just that article, but I was very happy to just let that slide. I'm not even sure I read the whole article. I thought, okay, that's neat, but maybe I wasn't, maybe this isn't for me. And maybe at that moment it wasn't, but then just in the fall of 2016, one of my favorite ways of finding books is finding people through books, really, is being in a Catholic library or a Catholic bookstore, but often a library. My husband works at Thomas Aquinas College, and we are, as you mentioned, graduates of there. So I was in that library looking for some material that I was using to help in a book that I was writing on St. Therese. And I found, as I was walking down the stacks, keeping my eyes open, I saw Marcel Van's autobiography, and I remembered the name, and it had a nice clear spine. You know, it just said autobiography, Marcel Van. But when I pulled it down, I didn't have any idea where it was going to lead. I brought it home. Oh, this is that guy. And maybe I can't remember if I got to it a few days later. And like I do, I knew that I would, if I started at the beginning, maybe not get very far. So I flipped it open and tried to find out where it was that he met St. Therese or began his conversations with her. And sure enough, I found that passage. It's about two-thirds of the way through the book. And when I started reading, I was blown away and super-duper excited about what she was telling him. That led to my realizing through this book that this was only one of four volumes of Marcel's writings, and that, in fact, there was a whole book dedicated to these conversations, not just with Thérèse, but also with Jesus and Mary. Mm. So I ordered that book. Since then, a year and a half, in this time, it's become more readily accessible because there's a group in France that promotes Marcel's cause. They're called Les Amis de Van. Mm-hmm. And they have gotten all of his books just maybe in the last 2 months. They've gotten all four volumes of his books in English onto Amazon for the United States and, you know, English speaking people. It's magnificent. They're very affordable. They've gotten the price down to $25 and free shipping. But when I was looking just a year and a half ago, I ordered for like nearly $40 a copy that had to come to me from far away, apparently, because it seemed to take forever, you know, to get so used to instant gratification. But the book came into my mailbox. I mentioned I was working on a book on St. Thérèse. It came into my mailbox the day that I finished the manuscript I was working on, and I had said a little prayer to St. Thérèse, hey, why don't you send me a rose in my mailbox to mm-hmm. let me know that you're good with what I've written about you. And sure enough, there was Marcel. And then I think that he and Thérèse played a little trick on me, because once I started reading that book, and it's just been my constant companion since then, I can't get enough of it, I discovered that I was much more interested in Marcel's conversations with Jesus than with his conversations with Thérèse, which seemed appropriate enough. You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
basically, that is how I came to know him, and especially through that book, Conversations. I was then really desirous of getting the book of his letters, his correspondence, and I could see pictures of it on the internet, and it had been translated into English. But like I say, his books were very hard to find. I was having a lot of trouble. And I ended up accidentally getting into correspondence with Jack Keegan, who's the British gentleman who's translated these writings of Marcel. And it just blows my mind, because what happened, Jack is the kindest man in the world, and what happened was he also, maybe 20 years ago, because he loved St. Thérèse, he saw a connection in an article he was reading mm-hmm. about there's this Marcel Van, and he called a number that was available to him to Les Amis de Van in France and asked, can I get an English copy of his autobiography? And they told him, we don't have one. We would love to have his books translated into English, but he wrote in Vietnamese. The books were translated by his spiritual director into French. That took his spiritual director 20 years to do that.
Oh, my goodness.
Satisfaction. Those only became, Marcel died in 1959. Mm-hmm. Those books became available in maybe 1985. And then I'd say closer to the year 2000, Jack, Marcel has this way with all of us. And Jack, in speaking and just requesting this book and finding out that it wasn't available, and they said, you know, unfortunately, we don't have the money to, you know, hire a translator. I'm guessing that's what they said. Mm-hmm. He surprised himself by spontaneously offering to translate that book.
Oh my gosh.
Which led to his own, you know, nearly 20 years, maybe 15, working on this project, one book after another, because he too fell in love with Marcel and wanted them available. So what's beautiful to me is that here is this saint who has a process for a cause for canonization going, and he's fairly close to our time, but far enough back, he died before 1960, that we might think in all those years, oh, how did I not hear about him sometime since then? I mean,
yeah.
Some of us maybe weren't born, but the idea being the saints were so used to having access to everything, and it's stunning to me to realize that I feel like my learning about him and loving him has been very timely, because even 10 years ago when I first read about him, I wouldn't have had access to his writings, whereas now...
Heck, I remember asking you a year ago where we could find these books, and you gave me some helpful websites, but there wasn't much to go on. So that's very impressive.
No, exactly. Yeah, no, and so they're really available now. Two DVDs about him have also recently put up on Amazon for the United States, and everything is right there, as if it's always been there. It's so wonderful. I think when I was first reading Conversations Then only a year and a half ago, and then I got in touch with Jack Keegan to find the correspondence of his letter. That's volume three. So it's first his autobiography, second his conversations, third his letters. And then there was a fourth volume that came out after, you know, I started getting curious about him just a year ago. So it's only now that these things are hitting English-speaking audiences, at least. I have heard from a friend that Marcel is much more known in France. And I've also heard from another friend that he's known in Vietnam.
Wow.
So it's an exciting time for us.
Yes.
I love that, you know, we're so used to, like, being first in everything. Like, nope, join.
It can take a little while sometimes for the good news to filter up. I liked what you were saying about this idea of falling in love with Marcel. I think that's how a lot of people do it, and it almost seems as if Marcel finds his way to the people who need him in some ways, whether it's a kindly priest who can take 20 years to translate or just everyday laity.
Yes, yes, yes. I think that... this is going to sound goofy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I entertain myself by thinking... It's not that I spend a lot of time thinking about this, but something will pop in my head. I'll say, that's what I want written on my tomb. You know? This is what I want to say. So, you know, I have thought, I believe in the communion of saints. That would be a great thing for a gravestone. And I do so love the saints. And what I have noticed is that I'm sure any saint that you chose and wanted to become friends with would be very happy to accommodate you.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I feel like there are certain saints that love, 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 not just to be friends from a distance, but to come very close. And Therese had said to her sisters when she was going to die, and they were all really sad, but they were writing down everything she said. She said some amazing things about the kind of friendship she would have with them after she died. And one of the things she said was, I will come down. And then there are magnificent stories. I wish I knew French. Volumes and volumes of stories in the archives of Mizzou Carmel, where they wrote down, they received and compiled all of these testimonies of different people who would say things like, I was reading this story of a soul, you know, it was right after she died. This was before there was a process, before there was much thought. Mm-hmm. But they had printed Story of a Soul and sent it out, 2,000 copies, and then ran out of those quickly. And then people started requesting them once the first set were out. She's really great at publicity or something. Self-promotion, that's the word. So they were getting all these letters, and you can read some of them in old books on St. Therese, and the letters will say things like, I read the Story of a Soul by Sister Therese of Your Carmel, and while I was reading it, I realized I could ask her, she really cared, and I could ask her, and then they'll mention some favor. And so as I continued reading, I started smelling these flowers. Well, we've heard of that kind of thing, but then
yes.
They might say, I heard a voice. You heard a voice, holy moly. And she just delighted in making herself, and still does, very, very present. There's a book now that's available by an author, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but Elizabeth Ficocelli.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Shower of Roses, and it's just contemporary stories about people having experiences like this. I have never heard a voice. I always laugh because I think then I'd have to really get serious and have a spiritual director who could discern where's the voice coming from. So I'm fine without that. But what I have found is that the more that we talk to these saints, the more that they are just thrilled, you know, to talk back in their own quiet ways, like Therese sending me Marcel on the day when I asked her to send me a sign. Some people, of course, there's the roses with Saint Therese, mm-hmm. but I don't want to minimize that. But I love her roses, and I love that because yes. I guess my point is the saints want to be close to us. And again, some in particular, Padre Pio is another one, but Marcel falls to this class where he doesn't stay away. I think that these saints choose us too. They're keeping an eye out, and they know when we need them, and then they enter our lives. And it's a gift that is beyond anything. I mean, if you think about how much friendship means to us, and true love, and romance, and all the things that Chesterton did such a great job celebrating and enjoying.
Yes, he did.
All those things, you know, I think are most epitomized in the saints and their friendship with us.
I agree. And you describe Marcel Van is a sort of shortcut to Teresa's Little Way. And actually, one of your articles is called A Little Way for Dummies. But can you describe how is he pathway to St. Therese and the Little Way of Holiness?
Yes, definitely. I think that I've been thinking about this for a while and trying to figure it out, but I think that the essential part of St. Therese's message to her and the most revolutionary thing about her and the reason that she gained such worldwide fame so quickly was that she wants to show us that it's precisely in our weakness and littleness and powerlessness that God loves us. We don't have to be something else. He loves us just as we are. And the more pathetic we are, the more attraction we have for him in a certain way, because, you know, whereas in the world, we're used to seeing people we really admire, mm-hmm. a fictional character. Jason Bourne, now the guy, right? But it's not about being strong and powerful. I mean, we admire these people, but we also tend to feel like, well, obviously, and that's fictional, but I mean, take a real life hero, we tend to think, I'm nowhere near that caliber of person. I couldn't achieve those
yes.
great heights. Well, Therese wanted over and over again to teach everyone, starting with the novices. She was made an official novice mistress in her convent, mm-hmm. and she started there, and letters she wrote, just this new little way, which was in fact very old. It's exactly what St. Paul says when he talks in Corinthians about wanting God to take away his weakness, but realizing that was where God let him know, that's where my power rests in you. So this is Therese is saying, if you're little, then God will take care of everything. Be that little child abandoning yourself into God's arms. And that was very effective in her own lifetime, because here she was. She died when she was 24. She could convincingly sell this to her sisters in the convent because they saw yes. her failures up close and personal. I was just telling my son this morning, she had never done any chores at home when she was mm-hmm. a little girl. And so when she went to the convent and was assigned the task of sweeping, she was terrible at it. And she was definitely afraid of spiders. And, you know, she had all these little foibles. And her sisters would see that. They would see her break down weeping. They would see her sleeping during her prayer time. And I mean, her sisters in the convent and her own blood sisters who were in the convent as well. But at this point and from this distance, we see that almost any church in the world you go into, there's a statue of St. Therese. And we know that if you call on her, she'll answer you, and we feel greatly that she's on Jesus' lap, and she's one of the greatest saints. St. Pius, the Pope who gave us daily communion, and communion at the age of 7, 100 years ago, I guess more than 100 years ago now, but he called her, before she was canonized, he called her the greatest saint of modern times. So when we think of her in the terms of the greatest saint of modern times, and if you've ever said a novena to her and found yourself, you know, roses coming at you, you think, oh yeah, she's a great saint. And then the problem with that is that it tends to undercut the message. I said I don't want her to change anything about that, so that St. Therese keep coming, sending you roses. But the problem with that is then she looks big to us. Mm-hmm. She's got this beautiful basilica. I've never been to this part of France, and I hope someday to go, but she's got this beautiful basilica with this huge statue of her in front of it, and this gorgeous kind of sarcophagus tomb inside, or, you know, where it's got this beautiful replica of her in death. All these things make us think, yeah, I love her message, but she's obviously big. Enter Marcel. He is so little. He also died when he was only 31, so young.
Oh my goodness.
But he had, like Therese, his intellect awoke very early. So on the one hand, he's constantly forgetting what Jesus just told him. But on the other hand, he was able to write his autobiography when his spiritual director asked him. He wrote it 4 or 5 times, which is amazing. Because this is no in Augustine or St. Thomas Aquinas. This is a little boy who's about 16, 17, 18. And trying to remember and write down he can about what has so far been a short life. And he does. He writes these things down, these full memories, very poetic. And everything that happened to him, he recalls, which I'm sure was the Holy Spirit acting to give us this gift. But in telling us his story, you see a very small person.
Yes.
He physically was also very small, but in the conversations in particular, Jesus said to him, Marcel, you're going to be one of my chosen apostles. I have many little secretaries, and I want you to be one. I want you to write down everything I say to you, but I also want you to write down everything you say to me, because I want those who read this later after you die, I want them to see the kind of intimate conversations we have, and I want them to understand that I'm not just there for people who are already perfect, you know, in all your crosses and struggles. So Marcel did what Jesus said, and the result is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Jesus, you know, the conversations, this is how the conversations go. Jesus will say something so beautiful and deep and theologically true. I've been blessed with a ridiculously great education. I got my master's degree in philosophy, and heaven knows why. I never wanted to teach. I'm a terrible teacher. But it turns out that when I came across Jesus speaking to Marcel, I would have enough background to be able to recognize his voice and say, there is no question. This is completely theologically sound. I mean, you don't need a great education because each of the 4 volumes of his collected works have an introduction and the sanction of the church through a cardinal, or one of them is an archbishop. And the first postulator of his cause, Cardinal Van Thuan, himself Vietnamese, now is venerable. So, you know, he's got the signs of holiness all about him. But when I read what Jesus said, when you read that, you hear such beautiful revelations of love, just like out of the things Jesus said to any of the mystical saints. And then Marcel's response. And I'm always hanging on Jesus' words, and then I'm ready. Marcel, I feel like the saints say we should meditate on Christ's passion every day, and I try to say my rosary. And, you know, I can really relate to St. Teresa of Avila saying, what a hard heart I have. You know, can I squeeze out a tear for you, Jesus? I mean, St. Teresa of Avila did. I have trouble. But when I read these words of Jesus to Marcel, I'm swooning. And then Marcel's response, yeah, Jesus, my soutane is too tight. Listen, aren't we going to get me a bigger one? Or, Jesus, I'm hungry. Or, yeah, Jesus, I forgot everything you told me yesterday. Could you say it over again? Because I need to write it down. I love it. I think, actually, I might be swooning with love for the second while I'm reading a book, because I love books, but, you know, in my holy hour, trying not to spend too much time on the grocery list.
Sure.
Jesus, I know you're right here in front of me, but I need to go to the grocery store. And he is so like us in that way. So, he is tiny and ridiculous and funny. He's human and down to earth and weak. He's forgetful. He's worried about the kinds of things we are, where someone says something to him and he comes back to Jesus and says, does brother so-and-so hate me? Or,
oh, man.
I was trying to tease this other guy and he got mad at me, and every time I try and make a joke, he thinks I'm sorry, Jesus, but, you know, what's... And then Jesus has these great answers, like, Marcel, it's none of your business. This is one of my favorites. But same time explaining, you know, don't worry, he's fine. What your job is just to try to be kind, but to pay attention to me, and don't let all this stuff get to you. It's convincing. It's convincing, and it's reading a little who lived it from a place of kind of our own poverty. That's basically what I'll say. So I think he's this little way for dummies, a little way that St. Therese gave us, but then taught him personally, in which he lived, in order to remind the world that this message is for all of us. And it's almost as if you want to trust your teacher. You have to trust your teacher or you can't learn. And if you were going to go become a neurosurgeon, you'd want to study with the best doctors in the world who knew what they were doing and knew how to practice what they preached. So similar, you're learning the little way. I think there's nowhere you can learn it from than someone little. And that would be Marcel.
And I think that's a great summation of just all the wonderful ways that Marcel can help to grow in holiness, which is a universal call. We at Catholic Exchange say we want to make saints in our lifetime, which sometimes I get an email like, really? Is that really a little presumptuous? I was like, hoping not, but we shall see.
Yeah, I was just reading in his, I always turn to the book Conversations. That's the one I'm most fond of. That's the one I most highly recommend. But his autobiography is amazing. And just today, I was, I've been writing at my blog a kind of novena of posts for 9 days, and I thought, you know, it's time to bring in autobiography. And I opened to when he first met Therese, and this story is exactly what you're saying. I think that, I mean, that's wonderful to hear. I love Catholic Exchange and also the work of Sophia Institute Press precisely because of this realization of the call to sanctity and this mission to try to bring that to everyone. Well, in some ways, I think that we take that for granted. So it's fun and funny to hear someone saying, really? But it's true, because we do all, on the one hand, even if we're familiar with it, it's hard to figure out how that works in our day-to-day life, especially when we're not, most of us, we're not priests and nuns. But I would say Marcel struggled with that, and that's what brought him and Therese together. He talks in his autobiography, at a certain point he interrupts the flow of the story to say, Father, writing to his spiritual director, Father Boucher, I want to tell you what happened at this point. I wanted so badly to become a saint, but I felt that that was presumptuous. And what he juxtaposes so beautifully is this tension in him. He didn't have Vatican II to bring out the universal call to holiness. He didn't yet know St. Therese, who showed us the little way. So he was thinking, saints are people who do great deeds for God. They endure great penances. And he himself had a lot of suffering, but he felt no attraction to voluntarily take on more, which I can really relate to as well. So he was saying, on the one hand, I felt this desire to be a saint, but on the other hand, I thought, I must be very presumptuous, and I wondered if this was a sin, because he thought it was a sin against humility, it was a kind of pride. So he's, on a very particular evening in October of 1942, he was 14, he's in the minor seminary, he's finally found a good one, and he's praying in the chapel, and he's tortured by this tension. This particular night, he just doesn't know what to do. So he goes over to the statue of Our Lady of Grace, the image that we see on the miraculous medal. He goes to a statue of Our Lady and says, Blessed Mother, I'm putting this problem into your hands. Please give me a sign and show me if these thoughts of wanting to be a saint are from the devil or from God and what I can do about it. Show me if there's a way.
Mm-hmm.
He went out of the chapel into study hall, and he had finished his homework, so he decided to pick up a book, A Saint's Life. And as he went over and looked at the books available to him, he was discouraged and kind of annoyed, because he wanted a book with a lot of pictures. Who wouldn't? And he had read the pictures, and the other ones looked boring. And he said, no, I'll tell you what. He's kind of talking to himself, kind of talking to Our Lady. He shuffles the books around, closes his eyes. I just read this this morning. It was so cute. Makes three gestures with his hands, kind of like a hocus pocus abracadabra. He says to Our Lady, whichever one you pick, I'll read. And he pulls out a book, which to his really intense disappointment is Story of a Soul. No pictures.
Oh my goodness.
And he says, oh, you little Therese, whoever you are, I know all about you. You're like all the other saints. You were born under prodigious signs. You lived a long life of miracles and severe penances. When you died at the age of 80, you know, he makes up all this stuff. And then he feels a little, if not guilty, he feels a little, like, okay, wait, I just told you, Blessed Mother, that I would read whatever book you picked. So he goes over and sits down with the book. And really, there was nothing else to do. Everyone else was studying. So he's, you know, kind of like us in that way, too. No good distractions.
I know the feeling, yeah.
So he sits down with the book, and he opens it, and he starts to read. And he is captured. He starts weeping because in the first pages of Story of a Soul, St. Therese asks God the question, why are there, this is terrible, I can't even remember how she asks it, but she asks about how it is that God comes to people, the greatest saints and the littlest ones, and she ends up talking about how his love is like the sunshine and the rain reaching and nourishing the largest cedar and the smallest little flower. And in those first few pages of Story of a Soul, which are so beautiful, Marcel found the very answer to the question that had been torturing him immediately. So, you know, that aside, he then, like I'm sure many of us have done, raced through the pages of a book that, you know, had his name written all over it. And just as I've fallen in love with him, as so many do, he fell in love with Therese. And it was really neat because it was that exact question of littleness and that exact question of how can we possibly be a saint that fascinated him. But then his relationship became so much more personal because he felt as if the pages that he was reading were exactly a mirror of his own life. Now, the first time I read that, I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. They grew up in very different milieus. But it turns out, the more you find out about Marcel, the more there are these parallels. For instance, he had a grace of conversion on Christmas Eve, where he had a real insight into God's love and what his mission was supposed to be. And that's similar exactly to St. Therese having what she called the grace of her conversion on Christmas Eve some decades before. So, for instance, when he had read that, you know, he would have said, wait a minute, but, you know, so he saw those particulars, but I think more than that, he felt that in her description of her childhood especially, he was really charmed because he saw that this was not a saint who grew up amidst the kind of visible miracles that we can read about in the lives of the saints that are beautiful and inspiring, but that seem so far from us.
Oh, yeah.
This was not a saint who practiced severe mortifications. Therese, they wanted to take care of her. She's dying, and she was never very strong in her health. So they gave her a foot warmer, whatever that was. You know? And she said, I'm going to be trying to go to heaven, and the other saints are going to be standing there with their instruments of penance. I'm going to be in line. I'm going to be holding my foot warmer. So he recognized in her a soul that was one made, you know, made for him to relate to. And then he goes on, maybe a few weeks later, he asked her to be his big sister and felt himself filled with joy that made him know she had said yes. That's the kind of thing that, you know, I'm ready for. I've experienced in my own small measure. But then, the next step, the one where you need a good spiritual director, he went out to sing and rejoice and dance around this mountain by himself where no one could see him. Just he was so happy he couldn't contain it. And then, I mean, I could see myself doing that, but then the voice, you know, then the voice, Marcel, my little brother, and thus began their conversations.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, and then she really started speaking to him,
and that's a one way to get an introduction to St. Therese.
Yes, and what I guess what I would want to say from that we can take away is that, you know, when I was little, I read a story of St. Anthony of Padua. I love him so much, and I read about the Christ child coming alive on the statue and speaking to him or jumping into his arms. And I used to go to church, and we had a really pretty statue of Our Lady that was with Jesus in her arms, you know. And I was, okay, Jesus, I'm ready. And it was only much later that I became a Third Order Carmelite and read enough of St. John of the Cross to know, okay, no, you're not, you don't really want to ask them those things. They bring their own troubles. But what was so charming with Marcel and Therese, and when she started speaking to him, was that what she told him first was, yes, I'm going to be your sister, which he had asked, but she said, I've always been your sister, and I've been waiting so long for this moment so that we could become friends, so that I could introduce myself, because it was all in the mind of God from eternity. But then almost you got the impression that since she entered heaven and had access to God's mind in a more clear and visible beatific vision kind of way, she had been excited about him for she died in 1897, and it was now 1942, so those intervening decades. And then after he was born, she's saying, I was there, but I was waiting for the right moment. And I like to think that that's true for the different saints that we meet, and for Marcel now. You know, he has been waiting for whichever individual soul is listening and hears something that piques their interest or draws them in. Or I have one friend, it's the most wonderful thing in the world. I think I had told her just a tiny bit about Marcel, and she was captivated, and she couldn't remember his name, but she knew this was the little brother of St. Therese, so she started praying to him and just kind of feeling his nearness. And I went one day to the drugstore in my town because I wanted to make a few little holy cards, and I picked out a few pictures of Marcel, and I walked out of the store, and here was my friend. And I just felt inspired to give her one of these pictures. And I had made this really goofy little, you know, you could make like a Christmas card or a Valentine's card. And while I was making the card, but I just had some fun and made this little Marcel loves you card, which I just made a couple of. I wanted to send one to Jack Keegan, and I wanted to keep one. And when I saw my friend, it's this kind of interior voice that's the more imaginary kind, you know, just the Holy Spirit whispering, give one to her. And I gave it to her. I said, I just have something I want to give you. And it was so great. She looked at it and said, I love him. And then she said, who is he? Oh. And she didn't know who he was. She knew that it was the little brother of St. Therese, but she couldn't remember his name. She had forgotten everything else about him, you know? But that's Marcel for you. I mean, he will enter your heart, and he wants to be with.
Oh, it happens that way. And I like to tell people I basically discovered St. Francis of Assisi simply because he was quoted one time, and even as a tiny, well, I wasn't tiny, I was a teen, and one wrote a monster size, but a young teenager discovered St. Francis. That started a pathway to a friendship I didn't know where it would take me. You never really do know where these friendships will take you. Exactly. And by the way, I had a similar encounter with Therese. I actively avoided her when I became Catholic because I just looked at St. Therese and I said, yeah, well, great. She was sinless. Good for her. I'm a convert. I can't do that. And it took me years before, I think it was actually Flannery, yes, it was in fact Flannery O'Connor. I read that Flannery O'Connor had such great devotion to her, and so did Dorothy Day, two women I have great appreciation for.
Oh, that's awesome.
And when I read Dorothy Day's biography of St. Therese, I went, oh my goodness, I'm in love with St. Therese now too. I want her to be my big sister. Did not see that coming.
I wonder how that works, because I know exactly what you mean. When I was a child, walking into our church, which was not a particularly beautiful church, it was kind of box-like, rectangular, just very plain. But they did have two really lovely statues and a beautiful tabernacle, and Jesus was there, so that was great. Walking in the back, there was just the tiniest little, almost like a little hallway you'd walk into the church proper. It wasn't a hallway, it was like a foyer, but it was not even worthy of the name. I mean, it was just a couple feet wide, and you'd just walk two steps in. It was this little, you know, 4x4 room almost that you passed through. On one side was a statue of the Infant of Prague, and I had this vague idea, who is that boy dressed so strangely? And on the other side you know, just to your left, and then just to your right, there was a statue of St. Therese, and I thought, yes. I don't like her. I don't like her. And I never really consciously thought those things, but much, much later, you know, I realized, gosh, I wonder why I never saw a statue of the Infinite Prague or of St. Therese. You pass them every day and despise them. This is the revenge they're taking on you.
Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, I think a lot of people have that, and there might be a temptation with Marcel Van because whatever public receptions can be. But what I often say is it's surprising how compassionate the saints are towards your failings and your missteps while you're trying to grow in holiness, because they have the same exact ones. They're not any better or more special than you, other than the grace that God gives them. But that's it. Otherwise, they had the same problems and had to still overcome the same issues.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Marcel says after he had his first critical thought about what this book was, he writes in his autobiography, I've got it here, he said, "Oh, my dear sister, you must necessarily be a saint of heroic courage to put up with the erroneous judgments that I have held on your life."
I think we could all say that. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but I do love that idea that, as you said, they experience those things themselves. So here's Marcel experiencing that, and so I love him. But
yes.
Therese, when she was writing to one of her first spiritual brothers, was when I was first excited about Marcel and mentioning him to people, a few people would say, "Oh, I know who that is," because the name sounded like Maurice, one of her spiritual priest brothers that she was assigned to write letters to in her life, two of them. One of them was Maurice Bellier, and he and she had this beautiful conversation that Bishop Patrick Ahern of New York, who's now now a saint too, but when he was just living in New York and loving St. Therese, I've heard that he learned French at the age of 70 in order to read her in the original.
Gosh.
So I have hope. I keep waiting for it to be divinely infused. But anyway, he wrote a book that, where he translated and put together just the letters of Maurice and Therese. So you can get, in fact, oh my goodness, your listeners should know, if they go to the Institute of Carmelite Studies, ICS, website, there's a summer sale going on now that they have every year, but they choose different things. And one of the beautiful things they can get this year, for just $10, you can get both huge fat volumes of Therese's correspondence, all the letters St. Therese wrote and letters to her during her life. So these letters between her and her priest brother would be in there. But Bishop Ahern made a separate volume that he published, that he got a great, like maybe Random House published it or something in New York, called Story of a Love. And in these letters, there's just about my favorite thing ever that Therese said, precisely on this topic of our relationship with the saint. Maurice was worried that after she went to heaven, because they knew she was dying, she wouldn't really be his friend anymore because she would know all about him. Any of us have ever had that worry.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my. Really see me? But she said, you know, she wrote to him and said in this letter, "We have a really different idea of the saints," because she said, What's true is that when I get to heaven, when the saints are in heaven, the blessed in heaven, she said, they have just gone through what we did. They just had all these same trials and tribulations and temptations and made it to the other side. So they're incredibly interested in you and precisely merciful to all those faults of yours that are making you scrupulous or fear God's justice or things like that. And she said, they love us even more and want to help us even more than they did when they were on earth, because now they're, you know, seeing it all with this clarity and the struggles we have. So I think that it's absolutely the case that they're patient with us. How many times have I forgotten St. Anthony, you know, months at a time, and suddenly my credit card is lost? Who do I turn to? And who always helps?
And how many times has St. Jude heard from, maybe this is just me, but I have a feeling it's not, but St. Jude definitely heard from many people who are trying to study at the last minute going, "Hey, you say you do impossible causes. Right. Oh, I got one for you."
Right. And, you know, I get a kick out of it because whether it's St. Jude and then St. Rita with The Impossible, or mm-hmm. another one for studying is St. Joseph of Cupertino. He was,
yes.
He was apparently so dumb that, but he did know, I mean, obviously he had a certain infused knowledge, and the one scripture yes. passage he knew was the one that the bishop asked him when they were having their oral exam as a group to go on to the priesthood, and he answered so beautifully because the bishop asked him the one verse that he was just brilliant at answering, and from the New Testament, the bishop said, "Oh, obviously you're all really well educated. I'm going to let everyone go just on your answer." So you pray to him to know, to be asked the things you know on the test. And St. Anthony, with finding things, you think to yourself at some point, it might cross your mind, is this either superstitious or kind of strange, or am I taking advantage mm-hmm. of the goodwill of the saints to just use them yes. in this way? And the answer is absolutely not. They want to be used. I mean, they want us to come to them, and if that's what it takes, no big deal. You know, again, they were here. They get it. anything that turns yes. us to God is good.
Oh, absolutely, and it's always impressive to me. I think a lot of people might know this if you're a music history fan, but Edith Piaf, of all people, had a great devotion to Saint Therese. Not what you would call an ideal or best example Catholic by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that's just it, though. We can look at that, rather than judging or anything, just say, well, yes. yeah, even the saints, no matter who you are, they do take an interest in you.
Yes.
And that's a very great comfort to realize, because not any of us are where we should be, but
yes.
with the saints, we can get a little further along.
Yes, I live in a town that is predominantly Hispanic in Southern California, mm-hmm. and I know I've heard people say, oh, the Mexicans in particular can be superstitious about Our Lady of Guadalupe. I have not found that at all. I can't tell you how edifying it is to see the devotion, which, you know, possibly
yes.
a person might be living a bad life, but you know that if they're clinging to the knowledge that Our Lady is their mother and that she's there for them, she's going to pull them out of that. And
mm-hmm.
I think that we can forget or downplay the role that these devotional, you know, sacramentals can have in our life, like rosaries or mm-hmm. statues. And certainly we can get attached to them. A friend of mine had this fabulous story about them. She used to, a good, sweet, very loving friend in Virginia when we used to live there. When we were leaving, she gave us a first class relic of St. Therese. And then when I was living out here in California, I had a friend who loved St. Therese and was going through a rough time, and I said, hey, would it help you to have St. Therese with you in this little relic? And so I lent the relic to her, and she loved that relic and would take it everywhere with her. And over time, Therese and God and the angels and the saints brought her out of the difficult times into really glorious marriage, and she's just had her first child and all these beautiful things. So St. Therese is back with me. But what my friend laughed about one day, she saw something on the internet about St. Gemma Galbani and how mm-hmm. Jesus was talking to St. Gemma and said, I want you to be detached from everything. And St. Gemma said, Jesus, I am. You know I am. And he said, there's one more thing. And she said, no, I've given up everything for you. And he said, no, there's one more thing. And all of a sudden she said, not the tooth. She had a relic from the Passionist. That was her order, who later became St. Gabriel Bisunti, and she had a relic that was his tooth.
Oh, my goodness.
She loves that relic.
Oh, my goodness.
Jesus is saying, don't be too attached even to that. And my friend said, do you think he's sending me a message? No. We need all the reminders we can get. We're so easily distracted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We all need help along the way in many ways.
Yes.
This is a question I love asking authors. I usually ask people this right after they've written a book. I know we haven't quite gotten a book from you about Marcel, maybe someday, but in the research and everything, writing you've been doing on him, what has been the most delightful or unexpectedly surprising thing you've learned about him or the spiritual life?
Well, you know, I would say the nearness of the saints, but we've already been talking about that, so I'm
yes.
going to think of something else, because I find certain themes in his writings, and I think the one that might be consoling me the most right now is about his forgetfulness.
Yes.
My mom has Alzheimer's, and, well, I'm not sure it's absolutely defined that that's what it is, but she's been having a lot of difficulties with her memories, and it's progressing, not her memories, sorry, her memory, and it's progressing, but what is a constant inspiration to me is that she remains incredibly cheerful. She's just the best attitude, and says, I said, you seem happier, though, than you've ever been. And she says, oh, I am. She said, if anything bothers me, I just forget about it. And she starts laughing, you know, because she actually does forget that it happened. And, this has been present to me personally in that way. But besides that, I have the worst memory in the world. So I'm wondering what's going to happen when I get Alzheimer's. It's going to be really bad. But
I can relate.
Such a bad memory. And yeah, we all experience that at times. Not all of us. Some have amazing memories, but some of us, mm-hmm. we're in this camp of bad memories. And my husband teaches now at Thomas Aquinas College, and previously he taught at Christendom College, both mm-hmm. magnificent college. We're just surrounded by the saints at both of these places. Tim O'Donnell over at Christendom, and Mike McLean as president over here, and the past presidents,
yes.
Warren Carroll, who founded with other people Christendom, and Dr. Ron MacArthur and the other founders here, Tom Dillon. We just have been surrounded by the saints at these places, and the students are just, I don't even know what to say. We love them so much. It's so edifying as the world seems like it's throwing itself into the mouth of death. You have so much inspiration. I think you went to Thomas More College. That's another great
yep.
school. You know, I don't even want to leave anyone out. Wyoming, Belmont Abbey, you know, there's Ave, there's Franciscan. You know, you don't want to leave anyone out. It's like a list of acknowledgments. No, these
sure.
schools. Well, so the blessing is we get to interact and meet my husband much more than myself, but, you know, we'll have students over for dinner. We get to meet and get to know mm-hmm. a lot of these students. This year in California, we had a fire, the end of all fires, so there was an evacuation there. We didn't happen to have people with us then. We had to leave, but then there was a flood, there were rains that were threatening mudslides. We were all safe in this area, but they evacuated the school just to, you know, be on the safe side in case they lost power and they didn't want their parents through all this again. So we had a group of students come to our house, and again, I just can't say enough about how much we love these students. But there am I, wandering around the campus and running into students that I have met multiple times, that I've had over to my house, that I've, you know, hosted for dinner, that I've spoken to at length about their... And I feel like I'm just a zombie. I walk around, I have no idea who they are. You know, I can't remember a name for the life of me. All of which is to say, there is Marcel, and he doesn't have my excuse. My husband, God bless him, he's been teaching now. I don't think we're old at all, but he's been teaching for, I think, 25 years now in colleges. Mm-hmm. So he's had this blessing of all these faces and names and stories coming before us, family, siblings. Marcel didn't have that excuse. He was really young. but he, too, forgot all kinds of stuff. And finally, you know, I've learned that a smile from the heart does a tremendous amount when I say to some dear student, tell me, have we met before? You know, and she has to say, yes, we're best friends. But I think that similarly, what Marcel was taught, I mean, you know, what must grieve us and worry us more is how many times we need to learn these lessons in the spiritual life and how quickly we forget. And I think whether you're a new convert or a cradle Catholic, whether you've been at this for years and years, or you're still, you know, a young teen like you were when you met St. Francis, you want to know what you need to do to love Jesus, to be a saint, to please him. And mm-hmm. you think, if only I just had one sentence. I'm not a big fan of tattoos per se, but, you know, I could just maybe use a Sharpie on my forearm and just write whatever it was I was supposed to remember. If I could, you know, and if it was short, I could keep it in my head. I wouldn't even need the Sharpie or the tattoo, but I forget it all. Like, and there is Marcel, exactly the same. And there is Jesus, and you get to find out what Jesus is thinking of all of us forgetful little nutters, you know? And what Jesus is saying is, like, I'm infinitely patient. I don't mind telling you again that I love you. I don't mind telling you for the 100th time, you don't need to worry. It's all taken care of. There's the Blessed Mother saying to Marcel, Marcel's worried about cleaning his room, and the Blessed Mother says, I'll help you, but there's a room that it's a lot harder to clean, the room of your soul. I'm doing all the work here. You and Therese and Jesus, you little ones are just playing over there, and I've got to keep cleaning your soul. And you know, the hardest thing to get rid of, I don't mind, Marcel, I'm glad to do it, but you know, the hardest thing to get rid of are these cobwebs, which are all of the worries that you have. I don't know how to tell you another time, but I will try. Marcel, don't worry about anything. That's all Therese and Jesus and I want to tell you. Don't worry. We love you. We're going to take you to heaven. You're doing fine. Just don't worry. I mean, they're all telling him this page after page, and I'm saying, thank you, God. Thank you, Jack Keegan, for translating this book for me. Thank you, Lays and Me Devan, for putting it on Amazon. Everybody, they have it. I just want to read this over and over again, because I will read that, and I will put it down, and I will start worrying about the next thing on my to-do list. I don't remember it 1 second longer. So, but yeah, it's always there.
Oh, that's understandable, and one I think a lot of us can relate to. Absolutely. Looking at the time, to wrap us up here, if anyone's listening to this and saying, you know what, maybe I need to have Marcel Van as a brother, it sounds like he could be really helpful, where would you have people start?
Well, I would say that there are two really fast options. Well, no, there's three. Let's go with the very first one. It's beautiful how the Protestant Christians don't waste any time, you know. Just ask Jesus to come into your heart as your Lord and Savior. So assuming we've already done that, baptism takes care of it for us as well. With Marcel, I would say the first easiest thing is just to do what he did with St. Therese and ask him to be your brother. He will accept instantly. He's waiting for the opportunity. And I sometimes think we are in on the ground floor with this whole Marcel mania. You know, no one knows about him. You can say, like, Padre Pio or St. Therese, and they are there. You call on them, and they're there. But, you know, they're sharing in God's powers and the angels because they're awfully busy. You know, they've got a lot of clients. Whereas Marcel, no one knows about him. So this is the time. You should have seen him. I knew you went. But if you want to learn more, if any of your listeners have the opportunity to use the internet, and I suppose they would, or they wouldn't have this podcast, I would say that the best place to start for anyone who wants to get to know Marcel better, there's the freeway, and there's the highway and the little way. There's the way that won't cost you anything, and then there's the way that will cost you $25, and I recommend them both. But it depends on your circumstances.
Of course.
I would recommend that readers go, they can Google my name, Suzieandres, and come up with the article I've written on Catholic Exchange, the Marcel Van, The Little Way for Dummies.
Mm-hmm.
They can search at Catholic Exchange.
Yes.
But I would say my website, as you mentioned, suzieandres.com, has a blog called Miss Marcel's Musings.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get themselves over there, like you said, the link will be at Catholic Exchange. It's in my bio on Catholic Exchange as well. If they can get over to Miss Marcel's Musings, they will find plenty of blog posts they can read at their leisure with very generous excerpts from Marcel. And that way they can start reading his words. I have to warn everyone, I have a relentless sense of humor that I think is funny.
So do I. We're good.
So they might have to skim through a lot of my idea of what's funny to get to Marcel, but he is absolutely there. And that's a place that they could begin to get to know him and see a lot of pictures of him and of the other saints. Then if a reader, you know, I suppose even, I can't remember if on the Amazon page, the Marcel listings, I can't remember if you can look inside them. Sometimes mm-hmm. you can get a sample and start reading something. Probably if it started from the beginning, you would get these wonderful introductions by Venerable Cardinal Van Thuan, Cardinal Schoenbrunn, Archbishop Renato, and Cardinal Ouellette of Quebec wrote one of the introductions. But you might not be able to get into Marcel himself. If anyone is able to save up their $25 and order copy of Marcel. Each of his four volumes are only $25 each, and I would most highly recommend Conversations, because you dive in anywhere and you just pull out a handful of gems. Yes. There's not a bad page in that book, not in any of them, but the autobiography I would recommend second, and I would again recommend what I did, which is starting about two-thirds of the way through, because he also relates to Thérèse in the suffering she had as a child. People didn't see her suffering, but her mother had died when she was four, and she went through scruples, and she went through a mysterious illness. And Marcel related to that because his childhood after an initial happiness is very sad. So I wouldn't say just start from page one and go through, because I would get too sad. Later I went back and read that, and it's well worth reading, but I'd start, again, about two-thirds of the way through when he meets St. Thérèse, and really call on him, and he will make himself known to you. He'll get his books into your hands. He'll get his picture on your fridge. He'll be there when you need him.
No, if there's one thing that's always in this podcast, is sometimes you find the saints, and a lot of times the saints find you. So, but it can work both ways. And we'll put all those links up at CatholicExchange.com, of course. So, as I always say, if you're driving, look in the show notes or go to CatholicExchange.com. You'll be able to get to those sites. But, Susie, thank you so much for coming on here. I really love how you and our fellow writer, Mara, have introduced me to Marcel Van, and I love that our readers are going to learn a little bit more. It's a blessing to have you on here today.